This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Watching the sun bake, all of those tourists covered with oil.
Cognitive scientist Dan Willingham of the University of Virginia joins me live in studio. He's online at danielwillingham.com, and he's the author of Why Don't Students Like School? It's an honor to welcome Dan back to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Coy.
Absolutely. How many classes are you teaching this semester?
I'm teaching two classes. I'm teaching one really big undergraduate class, about 350 students, and then I'm teaching a graduate level course with about 12.
Yeah. How do you, and I watched Allison actually fill in for a guy one time and teach a class of about 600 in Cabell Hall. How do you actually teach
an audience,
a huge crowd?
Yeah. I mean, when you've got that many students, obviously you're dealing pretty much with lecture. I mean, people have tried to come up with techniques whereby you can make it feel more intimate, where you can split the students up into groups and so forth and have them discuss. And I have a lot of respect for people who are able to do that. That's really masterful. That ain't me, at least not so far. And so, it's very much sort of it's the Dan Willingham show. It's a little bit of a lecture performance, yeah.
Dan, we are back to school. The kids have gotten on the bus. They got a few weeks under their belt. They're making friends. They're getting used to things. They've already had, in my daughter's classroom, they've already got new monarch butterflies that have come out of the chrysalis already.
Nice.
This is a big time of transition, and help us understand what parents and teachers and caregivers and grandparents, what do we need to be keeping in mind right about now?
Sure. I would say a couple of things that parents and grandparents should keep in mind. A big one is what everybody sort of knows intuitively is that kids get a lot of information about how they ought to feel about things from how their parents seem to feel about things, right? So there's lots and lots of data on this regarding attitudes towards illegal drugs. And you've probably seen the headlines about this, that parents who make it really clear to their kids that they strongly disapprove and they expect their children not to do illegal drugs, their kids much, much less often do illegal drugs than parents who feel the same way but don't express that. There are similar data about attitudes towards schooling. Parents who make it clear to their children, this is part of our family, this is part of who we are, we're the type of family where we enjoy school. Maybe we don't get straight A's, but school is a place where we belong. School is a place for us. Those kids tend to like school, they tend to enjoy school, and they tend to do better.
Interesting. So I guess the lesson is don't assume your kids know what you believe, and you communicate with your kids
exactly.
Every opportunity you can.
Exactly, yeah. And it's especially with teenagers, right, that they're sort of shrugging their shoulders and they're saying, I know. But it's sinking in, right? Despite the fact that it kind of looks like they're not really listening to you or they're thinking this is really uncool. I mean, if you wanted to be cool, you shouldn't have become a parent in the first place, right? I mean, that's sort of a lost cause.
Now, see, that's an important lesson. So to the 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old out there who's, acts like they don't want to hear from you.
Right.
No. I know that. And, whenever you open your mouth, they're like, no, hush up. I've got it.
Right.
Keep talking.
Right.
Keep communicating.
Right. Be persistent and show interest. I mean, this is the classic thing. Most parents do this, right, that you say, so what happened in school today? And what does the child say?
Nothing.
Right.
My daughter says that all the time.
Exactly. Nothing. And so how do you do need to be persistent. And another thing that can help, it certainly helped with my kids, is to be specific. Don't just say what happened at school today. If you get back nothing, first of all, make it clear that, I'm really not going to give up that easily, right? Nothing's not an okay answer in this house. But then be more specific. So what are you reading in English class?
Yeah.
Or for younger children, did you hear a story today? Or did another butterfly come out of the chrysalis and so on?
Yeah.
And frequently you get a whole lot more. If you give them a little bit more of a memory peg to hang it on, they're like, okay, well, I can answer that without too much.
With my 7-year-old daughter in second grade, I have found that it's easiest to start with the stuff that's sort of fun for her. So I'll always start with, well, what'd you have for lunch?
Right.
So then she'll usually tell me, we had such and such, and then I'll say, well, what'd you do in PE? Because she loves PE.
Yeah.
She loves to go outside. So then she'll tell me, so then I'll work my way down to, you know, so, you know, what'd you learn? You know? And I always ask her, did you make any big mistakes today?
Oh, because, nice.
Because in our house, it's all, you know, big mistakes are good. That means you're learning something.
Oh, awesome.
So
very
we
nice,
sort of,
yeah.
we don't praise them, but we say, hey, that's cool. Yeah. What did you learn
yeah,
from that?
What came out of that? That's yeah. right. That's great.
So
yeah.
so she's not afraid of mistakes. We talk about them.
Yeah. And I mean, another thing that I would mention for parents is something that you're obviously doing, which is showing enthusiasm. Another way in which kids pick up on how they sort of ought to feel about something is how you feel about it. So that if you make it clear that, yeah, I wasn't a math person and I hated math, you know, you're really giving them permission to hate math. And maybe they won't hate math, right? Maybe they hate it. Maybe they kind of do hate it now, but maybe there's a little hump they're going to get over and they're going to become the math kid. You just don't know.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, just, you know, everything is awesome. And of course, they're going to detect that there's a little bit of phoniness in this. You don't want to go over the top with it. But recognize that if you're dreary about something, that really sort of brings the child down. Especially then, too, what if they kind of like it and you're indicating you think that's kind of a loser subject? That's not really that fun for the child either.
Yeah, yeah. We are talking with UVA's Dan Willingham. He earned his PhD in cognitive psychology from Harvard University, and he's now teaching at the University of Virginia. His latest book is Why Don't Students Like School? You can learn a whole lot online at danielwillingham.com. Dan, tell us about, when you look at a household, can we learn things from households where kids do well in school? Do yeah. they set sort of a model, these yeah. homes that other homes could look at and follow?
Absolutely, they do. So, I mean, one thing that parents in those sorts of homes do is exactly the sort of thing we've been talking about. They're showing interest. They are also monitoring whether or not their children are doing their homework. They're monitoring what's happening in school. This doesn't mean you need to be a helicopter parent, right? And I think the difference between the helicopter parent and the parent who's showing some interest is the parent who's showing some interest is cutting the kid a little bit of slack to see what happens, right? The helicopter parent, you know, and I guess this is a common enough term that I can use it, right? This is the hovering parent.
The hovering parent. Yeah.
Right. The hovering parent will not ever let the child make a mistake in something like scheduling, right? So they'll say, well, now don't forget, you've got that science project coming up in 2 weeks, and if you don't get started now, you won't finish it, and so on. You know, step back occasionally, and let's see whether or not the child can develop those skills to do the scheduling him or herself. And if it's clear they're really not, then maybe you want to step in a little bit. So that's one aspect of a home where children tend to succeed in school. Parents who are showing a lot of interest and are showing concrete interest in what's actually happening in the classroom.
Right, right.
Another thing that those parents do is they partner with teachers. We haven't talked about teachers yet, but of course, teachers are an absolutely crucial part of this equation. And I think the parents who are really successful are ones who view it as a partnership. They understand that teachers might actually know something about my child that I don't. And that, in a way, is really scary for us as parents. But you have to bear in mind, your child is not necessarily exactly the same kid in school as he or she is at home, right? That's a whole different environment. And that is potentially a goldmine of information for you. If you want to know about what you're, you know, learn even more about your child, the teacher really might be able to tell you something about it.
My son has autism and he's in a public school this year for the first time, and he's doing things in public school I've never seen him do.
Yeah.
And I'm getting these reports back saying, he did what?
Isn't that exciting?
He's doing what?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But he's in an environment and things are just clicking in the right way, fortunately.
Yeah.
And it is surprising. I think you're right. Kids are, and when we think back to ourselves as kids, we weren't the same at home that we were in school.
Sure. And I mean, you're not the same at work as you are at home. Why would kids be any different? I mean, you know, they respond to their environment. They've got social ties there that they don't have at home. They interact with their teacher. They understand that the teacher is an adult and an authority figure, but not like mom and dad. So they interact with the teacher differently. There's all kinds of things happening there that are quite different than home. So the teacher is privy to all this information. And you, of course, no one knows your child better than you. So you should really be communicating with the teacher so that both of you can benefit from what the other person knows.
Yeah. What else should we keep in mind? With the goal that of making this year successful for our kids and that they do well and that they like school. I mean, to me, it's all about just do your best and like it.
Right.
Don't care if you get an A. I mean, you know, that's so subjective, but
right.
Do your best. You'll know when you're not. That's what I always was told by my parents. Just do your best. You'll know when you're not. You know?
I think one of the most important, this is very general now and is, you know, true not only for this year but all years, I think parental modeling is really important. So that if you are telling your child, school is really important, I expect you to do well, and so forth, and then as soon as you're done saying that, you click on the game, right? As opposed to maybe reading a book, maybe reading a newspaper. If your child sees that you are the kind of person you tell them you want them to be, that's hugely important, right? If you're trying to say school is a place that you should like, it's fun to learn new things. You like to learn new things. Show your child that you yourself like to learn new things. That's absolutely crucial.
Yeah. And that do studies show that that is actually carries more weight than what you might say to the child?
I want to say yes. The truth is, I mean, that is really complicated because the kinds of things that we've been talking about all tend to co-vary in the same home. So the parents who are in touch with the teachers are also the parents who are modeling these positive attitudes towards learning. They're also the parents who are monitoring what their kids are doing. All of these things tend to cluster together. So separating which one of them is crucial is very, very difficult to do.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to say yes.
Right. We're talking with UVA's Daniel Willingham. He's online at danielwillingham.com. Dan, this is all good advice. It's good things to keep in mind. But it's almost like we're dealing with the clean slate kid. What's your advice for parents who wake up in the morning with a kid who's already got some problems at school?
Right.
And is really, it's becoming a struggle for them. And there's a lot of folks listening who are dealing with that.
Right, right. I think here it's more important than ever to partner with the teachers and possibly the professionals in the school system to try and get to the bottom of what exactly the problem is. Does the child have a learning disability that so far has gone undiagnosed? And so school is nothing but frustration and a source of shame because the child feels like I'm always failing. Or is it primarily a social problem? And this, again, this is a case where I would really have an open mind to what the teachers and the professionals at the school are telling you. It can be hard stuff to hear, well, you know what, I'm seeing some behavior from your child that is, you know, to the parents here, sounds really antisocial or doesn't sound good. And you can't believe it. You're saying, you know, my child is never like that at home. It's possible that you are right and the teacher is right, that the child is just behaving in very different ways. And so you really, because you're not on site at the school all the time, your best source of information is going to be the teacher and other professionals at the school.
Interesting. So again, that lesson, reach out to the schools.
I think so, yeah.
Recognize, absolutely. As frustrated as we might get sometimes, recognize that there's a lot of people there who know what they're doing.
They do. And, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is they have seen lots and lots and lots of kids. Right, they really have a perspective on a whole range of behaviors that we never get to see.
Yeah. Now we got a couple of minutes left. I'm just curious. Do you see all the talk of schools and making schools better, and you know the underperforming kids? And do you see any room for hope here? I mean, are schools getting better by and large? Or are they getting worse?
That's an interesting question. I think they're neither getting better nor worse. I think the reason for hope is that there is more interest than there has been in a long time in improving schools. There's always a lot of noise, but I think people are noise about schools. But I think policy people are starting to home in on ways of really shining a light on whether or not schools are doing well, which schools are doing well, which schools are not doing well. And I think that's a very positive development.
Do you see the policymakers and the legislators who ultimately control these purse strings, do you see them eventually getting past this place where it's all about testing?
That's an interesting question. I hope so. I mean, in the past, what has happened is there have been sort of cycles. There's a pendulum swing where you get a lot of testing and people are very concerned with standards and people say the kids have got to know something, by gum, none of our kids know anything. And then the people start to get disillusioned with that. And they say, you know, we're cramming facts down our kids' throats and they don't know anything. All they've got is a belly full of facts and that's it. And then the pendulum starts to swing in the other direction and people start talking about problem solving and critical thinking and they talk about less testing. And then people get disillusioned with that and they say, you know what, our kids can't identify in what half century the Civil War took place. We need a back-to-basics curriculum, and the pendulum starts again.
So that's the history of American education. That it's gone back and forth.
That's the last 100 years. And so one hopes, I mean, in calmer moments, everybody recognizes you need both. You need to teach kids to think, and you need kids need to actually know something. And so hopefully in the next 10 years, we're going to see some middle ground.
Check him out online at danielwillingham.com. There's a whole lot there. And read the new book, Why Don't Students Like School? It's fantastic, and there's a lot to learn there. Dan, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
It's always fun.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.